This is the audio program for Angels in America, Part 2, Perestroika, by Tony Kushner, presented by the Theater School Showcase at DePaul University. Dexter Bullard, Artistic Director. Director Jane Drake Brody, Scenic Designer Tierra G. Novi, Costume Designer Taylor S. Payne, Lighting Designer Garvin Jellison, Sound Designer Jenna Moran, Voice Dialect Coach Phil Timberlake, Fight Choreographer Chuck Coyle, Flight Choreographer Sarah Fornace, Dramaturg Matthew T. Messina, Stage Manager Emily Hitmar, playing February 8th to 17th, 2013, at DePaul's Merle Reskin Theater. The 2012-2013 Theater School season is dedicated in loving memory to Director of Development Tessa Crabb Cox, 1944 to 2012. Our theater is located at 60 East Balbo Drive, Chicago, Illinois, 60605. Email theaterboxoffice@depaul.edu. Website theater.depaul.edu. Box office telephone 312-922-1999. The cast plays multiple roles. The Bolshevik Oleski, Hannah Pitt, Henry, Ethel Rosenberg, and the Angel Asiatica, Daniela Colucci. The Angel, Emily, Mormon Mother, Alyssa Walker. Prior Walter, Jack Ball. Mr. Lies, Belize, the Angel Oceanica, Reginald Simon. Harper Pitt, the Angel Africani, Lauren Blakeman. Joe Pitt, Mormon Father, and the Angel Europa, Joe Keery. Roy Cohn, the Angel Antarctica, David Giannini. Louis Ironson, and the Angel Australia, Matthew Sherrill. The place, New York City. The time, 1986. There will be 2 10-minute intermissions. Angels in America, Part 1, Millennium Approaches Synopsis. New York City in 1985, at the height of the AIDS crisis. After the funeral of Lewis's grandmother, Prior Walter, Lewis's boyfriend, tells him that he has contracted HIV. That same day, legendary Republican lawyer and power player Roy Cohn offers Joe Pitt, a young Mormon law clerk, a prestigious job in Washington. Joe wants to take the job, but refuses to formally accept until he's talked it over with his wife, Harper. But Harper does not want to move to Washington. The two couples' fates quickly become intertwined. Joe stumbles upon Lewis crying in the bathroom of the courthouse where he works, and they strike up an unlikely friendship. Harper and Pryor also meet in a fantastical mutual dream sequence in which Pryor, operating on the threshold of revelation, reveals to Harper that her husband is a closeted gay man. Harper confronts Joe, who denies it. As they argue, Lewis tells Pryor that he's not sure he can handle the stress and fear of caring for Pryor when he's sick. When Roy Cohn is at an appointment with his doctor, he learns that he has been diagnosed with AIDS. Roy thunders that he has nothing in common with gays. AIDS is a disease of homosexuals, whereas he has liver cancer. Henry urges him to use his clout to obtain AZT, an experimental new AIDS drug. Both Pryor's illness and Harper's terrors grow worse. Lewis strays from Pryor's bedside to seek anonymous sex in Central Park at night. Fortunately, Pryor has a more reliable caretaker in Belize. Pryor confesses that he has been hearing a wonderful and mysterious voice telling him that she is a messenger who will soon arrive. As the days pass, Lewis and Joe grow closer. Finally, a drunk Joe telephones his mother in Salt Lake City to tell her that he is gay. Joe then tells Harper that he's gay, as Lewis tells Pryor he is moving out. One night, Pryor is awakened by the vision of two of his ancestors, who tell him they have come to prepare the way for the unseen messenger. Joe tells Roy he cannot accept his offer. Roy explodes. Roy tells Joe that his greatest achievement was intervening in the 1950s espionage trial of Ethel Rosenberg, guaranteeing her execution. Joe leaves, and the ghost of Ethel herself appears. In the climax of Part 1, Pryor's prophetic visions culminate in the appearance of an angel who crashes through the roof of his apartment and proclaims, "The great work begins." Roy Marcus Cohn lived from February 27, 1927 until August 2, 1986. He was a high-powered American attorney who practiced law for nearly 40 years. He lived in New York City, where he represented many of the city's high-powered individuals. Cohn served as Senator Joseph McCarthy's chief counsel during the investigations into communist activities. His rise to fame was also due to his involvement in the Army McCarthy hearings, as well as the espionage trial of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. He never publicly admitted he was homosexual, but it has been confirmed he carried on relationships with many men. Cohn died of AIDS in Bethesda, Maryland. Ethel Greenglass Rosenberg lived from September 25, 1915 to June 19, 1953. She was accused of passing atomic secrets to the Soviet Union with her husband, Julius Rosenberg. They were found guilty and executed in the electric chair on June 19, 1953. Roy Cohn was on the prosecution team and pushed for a death sentence. Director's Note by Jane Drake Brody. In January, I sat in the theater school lobby, crowded with students, faculty, and staff, as we all watched the televised inauguration ceremonies together. As Richard Blanco stepped to the podium and was introduced, a cheer broke out in the room to celebrate him, a young Cuban immigrant who was the first openly gay poet to write for the event. As I listened to the poem, I realized that years after Perestroika was written, this beautiful young man was still in touch with everything that Perestroika seeks to say. For space considerations, I can only include a cutting of the poem. I urge you to find the entire thing and read it when your faith and hope for the world is gone. One sun rose on us today, kindled over our shores, peeking over the Smokies, greeting the faces of the Great Lakes, spreading the simple truth across the Great Plains, then charging across the Rockies. One light, waking up rooftops under each one, a story told by our silent gestures moving behind windows. All of us as vital as the one light we move through, the same light on blackboards with lessons for the day, equations to solve, history to question, or atoms imagined. The I have a dream we keep dreaming, or the impossible vocabulary of sorrow that won't explain the empty desks of 20 children marked absent today and forever. Many prayers, but one light breathing color into stained glass windows, life into the faces of bronze statues, warmth onto the steps of our museums and park benches as mothers watch children slide into the day. We head home through the gloss of rain or weight of snow or the plum bush of dusk, but always home, always under one sky, our sky, and always one moon, like the silent drum tapping on every rooftop and every window of one country, all of us facing the stars, hope a new constellation, waiting for us to map it, waiting for us to name it together. Richard Blanco, One Today. Dramaturg's Note by Matthew T. Messina, third year BFA, Dramaturgy Criticism. Perestroika, Russian, literally, restructuring. This play takes place in turbulent 1986 New York City, encompasses immense political and social issues, and at times seems to be a call to political action. But it is not. The play is not about Democrats or Republicans, communists or capitalists, gay or straight, infected or not infected. The play is about people. It is about you and me. It is about human beings, regardless of race, gender, political or economic power, sexuality, or HIV status. The play cannot be seen as simply a call for reform to the conservative political agenda of the United States that came about in the age of Reagan. Because before anyone can begin to restructure America or the world, there is another task to be accomplished. We must restructure ourselves first, which is the greatest and most grueling task of all. We must rip at the seams of our souls, destroy what defines us, and emerge from the settling dust reborn, prepared to create the world anew. Each character begins at the end of a long road, and that road is that path to reconstruction. Throughout their fantastic journeys, they either grow a new skin and create a new means of survival, or they resist, wither, and die. When you lose everything, even your own skin, will you restructure, regrow, and move forward? Or will you remain static and slowly die? Existence can either be progress or stasis. One is life and one is death. Progress is painful, but there is a sense of benediction. There is hope for the future. It is up to us. If we choose to enact perestroika in our lives when it is most needed, each of us has the potential to create something momentous. Once we are able to restructure ourselves, we will gain the power to restructure our communities, our country, and the world. As Pryor says in the epilogue, "You are fabulous creatures, each and every one, and I bless you. More life. The great work begins." Tony Kushner, playwright. Born in New York City in 1956 and raised in Lake Charles, Louisiana, Kushner is best known for his two-part epic, Angels in America, a gay fantasia on national themes. His other plays include A Bright Room Called Day, Slavs, Hydrotaphia, Home Buddy Cobble, Caroline or Change, the musical for which he wrote book and lyrics with music by composer Jeanine Tesori. Kushner has translated and adapted Pierre Corneille's The Illusion, S.I. Anski's The Dybbuk, Bertolt Brecht's The Good Person of Szechuan, and Mother Courage and Her Children, and the English language libretto for the children's opera Brundibar by Hans Krause. He wrote screenplays for Mike Nichols' film of Angels in America and Steven Spielberg's Munich, as well as Steven Spielberg's movie Lincoln. Kushner is the recipient of a Pulitzer Prize for Drama, an Emmy Award, 2 Tony Awards, 3 Obie Awards, an Oscar nomination, an Arts Award from the American Academy of Arts and Letters, the Penn Laura Pels Award for Mid-Career Playwright, a Spirit of Justice Award from the Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, and a Cultural Achievement Award from the National Foundation for Jewish Culture. He was also awarded the 2009 Chicago Tribune Literary Prize for Lifetime Achievement.